You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I think that's Kierkegaard once used that phrase, Yehu, in one of his beautiful works. So Sandifer Timothy, Vice President of Litigation for and Chief Lawyer at Goldwater, will be here at 8 to talk about the Goldwater Institute's winning the getting it dismissed, the prevailing wage that the city of Tucson and Phoenix were dropping on businesses doing business with those entities. It was an obvious violation of state law. And so we'll see what happens. But it's so perfect timing because we had this foolish little man named Kevin Dahl in his Rahina had to drag him out to all the heat's on Laura Conover, right? Everyone, it's really just coming out that she sucks and that people who work for her hate working for her. But they're pulling out all the stops to try to save her. And by pulling out all the stops, we mean even useless ones like Kevin Dahl. And they keep repeating the same bullcrap over and over again. But he actually refers to Goldwater Institute in his pro Conover piece. That's just hilarious and actually inaccurate. I know. Shocking. We then have other people coming on the show today, which is really exciting. What do we got today? Today is Wednesday. There we go. We have Mark Moyar, which Matthew is going to call at 6:30. And Matt's a person. And he writes, not you, the other person. You're a person too, but you know what I mean. He's the author of Masters of Corruption, How the Federal Bureaucracy Sabotaged the Trump Presidency.
Yeah.
He's the chair of military history at Hillsdale College. And he is going to, we're going to talk about a variety of things with Mark. Then at 7:30, Leslie Corby. Yes. The Leslie Corby.
All right.
And Leslie, I didn't know Leslie Corby from a hole in the head, as we like to say. But this part fascinated me, and I just had to give it a shot. It's about a book of poems, right? An exploration of the present moment, a time in which postmodern progressive ideas reign as the societal benchmark, and basically... She actually takes on the progressive radicals through poetry. So I'm like, all right, I just thought, we've never had a poet like this on the show before. I didn't know it, but we had a poet, we're going to do it. And then Sandifer at 8:00.
Well, poetry is not always effective for the progressives because you had, you know, AOC bouncing up and down and jumping and yelling and screaming and just going off, coming unhinged and rapping to, that didn't help Jamal Bowman, the fire alarm puller. So that didn't work out so well for him.
Jamal lost his primary yesterday.
He did.
No one's going to miss you, Jamal. No one.
The fire alarm inspector got some work out of it.
Thank you.
Let's see, does this fire alarm open the door?
What was that vote for again that he was what was it for again? I'll try to remember.
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know which one.
Wakey's text me. You're much smarter than me on some of this stuff.
It's like the Midvale School for the Gifted, you know, with a guy, you know, pushing on the door that's marked clearly marked pull.
I mean, he obviously was doing to disrupt the vote and
clearly.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the mailbag. I got a bunch of stuff I want to get to today. Our friend Kurt,
we got letters.
Our friend Kurt, he sent us the C click. Nothing gets done, even though Pima County told you it got done, but it still didn't get done. They finally fixed it. So he's like, "Here's a picture."
Now they'll
before.
Tell you that they're not responding to your request.
Correct. So score one for municipal masochist is the title of his email. So thank you, Kurt. Let's see, Deb, Chris, I had to rant about this. One of the shows on KVOI had Rahina Romero on. I didn't believe she wanted questions, so I know that they didn't answer the phone and there were no questions. I wanted to vociferously agree with her that crime is 30% down and challenge her to respond to my charge that no one calls the cops anymore. Duh. We just had two murders down here on 12th and Ajo and 13th and Drexel within a couple of days of each other. She's a liar. There's nothing I can do about other shows. So, sad to say. Not that really sad to say. That's life. Harry, our friend, of course, the Harry, who worked here for a long time.
Sure.
Chris, I mistrust the weasels. Me and you both. July 1st is Kate Steinle Day. I want to remind folks how Pelosi's illegal alien constituent Jose Inez Garcia Zarate attained a weapon and murdered Kate on the pier in the Embarcadero on July 1, 2015. No one's above the law, as leftists like to boast, except illegal aliens, as Zarate was acquitted of murder by a San Francisco jury. Swalwell was the congressman of Pleasanton, California, where Kate lived at the time. May she be honored by the U.S. Congress and those who oppose illegal immigration. So, thank you, Harry. Appreciate it. And then Bev, our friend up in Catalina, loved the history segment with Don Dickinson we did yesterday with Bruce Ash. And I got a lot of comments.
It was fantastic.
As we like to say, Don classed up the joint. One note on playlists, because two of our friends have sent us playlists. And again, I got to remind you again, if you do a playlist, you have to, I can't have explicit words in it. I just can't. I was doing a playlist for one of our listeners today. I was going to get into it. And, you know, like by the time I got to the fourth or fifth song, there's profanity in it. I'm sorry, guys. I love you, but if Matt's really paying attention because he's somehow doesn't have his other things aren't blowing up in his life, there's a chance we can do that, but that doesn't work that way. And we never know how long a bump's going to play because who knows what the hell's going on here. So two of our great listeners, I love you guys, but you got to pay attention. I literally got to the fourth or fifth song and stopped because I'm like, this is just taking too much time. So just find songs that don't have the F-bomb in it and the S-word. I mean, you can do it. I know you guys love music. You know, the question came up about second playlists. It's like second breakfast in Lord of the Rings. All right, second playlist. Now, if you're going to submit a second playlist, I'm open to that. But let's have a theme to it, right? Like the Curse had great vocal performances. Kurt Schmidt did bands that they saw live, and he did a list of where he saw. Let's do a good theme, right? I'm open to good theme. So that's wakeuptucsoncomments@gmail.com. 18 songs. If you want to do a second playlist, good theme to it. Now, if you submit to me and go, here's another 18 songs, it may not make it. I want you guys thinking outside of the box here a little bit. Or thinking, just think. I want a fun theme that's either germane to the show or something that's important. Just something. Think
songs
about
that are onomatopoeia or palindrome song titles.
Wow.
Or...
look at you. You are the man. So, after the one I abandoned because of the bad language, I went to the next chronological one, and it turned out to be the general manager of the station, Patty Ruiz's playlist today.
Yeah, I looked through there. I didn't see the one you were talking about earlier, but this one looks fantastic.
I didn't send it to you because I never finished it. So, we'll get there. We'll get there. All right. So remember, we got Mark Moyar talking at the bottom of the hour, and he's the guy who wrote a book about how the federal bureaucracy did in the Trump presidency. We'll talk about that. Then I got a poet in the 7 o'clock hour, Tim Sandifer at 8:07, talking about the Goldwater victory over the city of Tucson and the city of Phoenix on their prevailing wage crap. And then our friend Grant Kruger on Jumpin' has Bob Hoffman from the Roadrunners They just released their schedule of 30 plus games in Tucson.
36 now. Yes.
I was covering myself with the classic 30
plus. No,
that's
cool. It was in the news yesterday. They were going to play 30 here and 6 at the fun named Mullet Arena in Tempe. And when the land auction blew up, they said, well, we'll just do them all here.
Okay.
Yeah. So nice. 36, the whole schedule.
And then at 9:30, he has a governor candidate that is going to possibly, actually, probably really waste our time in the general if she wins the primary, but God bless him, Carrie Lake at 9:30 on Grant
Senate,
Show.
Yes.
Senate, three, sir.
Three, sir, yes.
That one. As you know, Chris is a Mark Lamb fan. All right, 6:19 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson. We are playing Patty Ruiz's playlist today. And I think she's kicking it off with a good one here. A little Junior Walker. Can't beat that for our kickoff day, our kickoff song.
It's all right with me.
Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. All right, you're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. We're playing our friend Patty Ruiz's playlist today. It was funny when I sent the email out to a few people, she literally gave me the, I don't have time to do a playlist. And then 4 minutes later, she sent me a playlist. So good job, Patty.
Glad she did.
Absolutely. All right. This is a tab that's really
this
aging.
One's a super critical tab.
Thank God the American Pilots Association, who should be worrying about Boeing doors blowing off of planes and things like that, has they've changed their urged their aviation the aviation community to stop using terms considered offensive to women and LGBTQ individuals. Now, Matt, for some reason, they don't like the word cockpit. So just to let you know that. So
real.
All right, you can't use cockpit anymore. All right, just remember. Offensive terms, you cannot. They don't want you to use cockpit or manpower. Okay, so that's a problem.
Okay.
They're non-inclusive.
All right.
I love this one. Policy collaboration. The pilots union collaborates with, thank Jesus, the United Nations agency on these policies. They got a real good track record over in aviation.
Next, they're going to say that the English language, which is standard in aviation around the world, is somehow colonial.
Thank you.
No, they'll make up a new language that everybody has to speak, so nobody has an advantage.
Other recommendations, Matt, include please avoid the terms mother or father, or wife.
In the line of work of a pilot. When are the words mother, father, what was the third one?
Mother, father, husband, or wife. You can't use either of those. They don't want you to use any of those anymore.
At no time can I, all right. Okay, well, please continue. Are there more? That's got to be an exhaustive, inclusive list. That's got to be everything that they don't want used.
The guide suggested replacing cockpit with flight deck. I always thought the flight deck
was... How
about
bridge?
Like Star Trek.
Sure.
I like that better. I always thought flight deck was the top of a aircraft carrier.
Right.
Am I wrong on that?
Right. Sounds right to me.
Please use people or human power instead of manpower.
Okay.
Please discourage... Stop addressing groups as guys. G-U-Y-S.
Okay.
Linguist... And a cunning one at that, Ben Zimmer, noted in a Wall Street Journal article that cockpit originated in the 16th century cockfighting, evolving to describe tense environments and later the area on British warships for treating the wounded. Who knew? Let's see. Former FAA safety
what
team.
What do they call it? Why don't they call it the why don't they call it the front hole?
That Neely. Major airlines like United have faced growing criticism for their DEI initiatives. Their CEO Scott Kirby grew backlash for promoting diversity goals, aiming for 50% of their graduating pilot classes to be women or people of color.
definitely don't use the word thrust.
Wow. That's true, too. Thrust is a problem. So anyway, no husbands, flaps. Mothers, no husband, wife, mothers, or fathers when talking to the pilots union.
Patty's giving us the song about taking personal responsibility for every action to take us into the sixth.
So I had to take a guess on this one. She put "It Wasn't Me" with no artist. So there's a few of them, but I chose the George Thorogood version.
Song about standing up and taking personal responsibility.
All right. When we come back, Matt Neely is going to get a young man on the show named Mark Moyar. Sorry. Matt is going to call Mark. Wake up, Tucson. All right. Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson. Remember, we have our happy hour on July 17th at Games and Gadgets. It's going to be a trivia happy hour. Please join us 5:30, July 17th. And August 17th is our big fundraiser for Southern Arizona Honor Flight. So you're hearing the commercials now. Thanks to Tucson Coin and Autograph for the big chunk of gold they donated as part of our raffle to raise money to get these veterans to D.C., and we've had some. Matt's done it. Margo's, of course, knee deep in it. And Ken and Donna, two of our great listeners, are vets who've done it. It's the right thing to do and the right way to do it, as Mr. Brimley would say. Let's go right to the phones. Mark Moyar, he is the author of Masters of Corruption. He has so many accolades. I don't have a whole show to do it. I do know he survived going to Harvard and a PhD from the University of Cambridge. Good morning, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. Great to be with you.
And I know we're going to talk about VP picks, but when I saw about the book Masters of Corruption, I was looking into it a little bit more. And we always want to talk about a lot of good things that Trump did in his first 4 years. Just explain to us briefly, talk about how the federal bureaucracy sabotaged the Trump presidency. Give us a little feel for that.
Yeah, so I was a Trump appointee at the Agency for International Development, and we were caught in a struggle partly within the ranks of the political appointees, because one of the biggest problems in the first Trump presidency was that they were caught off guard by actually winning, and they weren't really prepared to pick the people to actually serve in the administration. Chris Christie was originally going to do it, and so you ended up having some people there who were not really committed to the president's mission, and they were there more for themselves or they had a different ideological view. And so I was one of those who was trying to drain the swamp and reported corruption, but then I came under attack from career bureaucrats who didn't want to stop corruption or change the status quo. And then one of our political appointees, who was married to our industry's top lobbyist, ended up joining forces with them. So that's really what the book is about, and how the bureaucracy is set up to try to stifle people who actually want to reform it.
Who is one or two cabinet members who are obviously a problem as you look back on it?
Rex Tillerson, certainly. Yep. At the State Department, and he was, that's again an example of somebody who wasn't thoroughly researched. James Mattis at the Defense Department is another. He clearly wasn't on board with the president's policies. And so, I know that Trump campaign and others have been spending the last few years actually trying to identify who should take these places so we don't have this same problem the second time around.
And I'm still get to the VP. I'm still fascinated by this. Tell me, if he wins again in November, how do you tackle how do you actually drain the swamp? We've had this discussion with David Schweikert, who's he's a supporter of the president. He helped write the tax cuts. We've talked about, he thinks it's going to even if you had both houses, it'd take at least two or three terms of a president to even get close to where you need to go. But what's a good start if Trump gets back in?
Yeah, well, the first thing is to get good people into these cabinet positions and the federal agencies, because if you don't, the swamp is going to continue to do what it does. The federal bureaucracy vastly outnumbers the political appointees, and the appointees have some positions of power, but if the appointees are not there firmly focused on the mission, you're not going to get very far. And then, as you said, having the Congress Republicans in command of both houses will be necessary to make some big systemic changes because the Democrats don't want to change any of this stuff. But probably the first thing they need to do is change the rules on how you can fire shrink agencies, because right now the unions are so strong that it's almost impossible to fire anyone in the federal workforce. And, you know, at best you can move them to a meaningless position, but then, you know, with taxpayers like you and me are then paying somebody a big chunk of change to sit and do nothing.
And my last one on this is, how did the hostile bureaucracy really do him in during the coronavirus episode?
Yes, well, they, you know, pushed this view led by Dr. Fauci that there is some sort of vague science that only Dr. Fauci can divine, and that therefore we had to go along with whatever he said. And I think the administration was a little bit slow to push back against it. Of course, Dr. Fauci enjoyed support from the mainstream media, and we now know he was pushing a bunch of information that he knew to be false. So there again is another problem where you have, you know, bad people within the administration getting in the way.
So let's get to vice president choices. We've heard he's down to three. We've heard Marco Rubio. We've heard a couple others. So for you, Mark, so yes, we want to gain, you know, as part of electoral side, but isn't there also the side of how do you continue the good work after, because Trump's now got 4 years only left to go, continue the hopefully change and good work afterwards?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he's got sort of two competing priorities. You've got, on the one hand, you want somebody who's going to help you win the election, and then you want someone afterwards who, after your 4 years, can take the reins. And to some extent, those are competing with each other, because to find somebody to help you win the election, you may need somebody who is a bit more establishment or can appeal to those swing voters, suburban moms, and you know, Trump already has the votes of all his base, so if he appoints somebody just like him, he may not get more votes, you know, somebody like a J.D. Vance. But then if he does pick somebody who's not fully in line with him, then again raises this question of who's going to carry the reins. So it's a tough call to make. You know, I do think, you know, the most important thing is winning the election, and because if you don't win that, then the other stuff doesn't matter. But, you know, obviously he's a very savvy politician and has, you know, a good sense on these things. And, you know, hopefully he can find somebody who can do both of those things, help him at the ballot box, but also ensure continuity after he leaves.
So J.D. Vance, in relation to Ohio being a crucial state, that's the reason you'd bring him aboard?
Yeah, I think so. And also because he seems to be somebody who's very in sync with the president on just about every major policy issue. So that does certainly make him attractive. Now, Ohio has been moving more towards being a red state, and I'm actually from Ohio originally, so it perhaps not quite as important as it has been in the past, but obviously you got to win Ohio to win the presidency.
So who are some other options? We talked about Marco Rubio. Why would you do Marco Rubio?
I think he can appeal to some extent to independent voters and also to Hispanic voters. Trump's already making headway, so there again raises the question of how important is that at this point. And of course, Biden has really alienated the Hispanic community in many ways, and they now are, majority of them, actually favoring deportation of illegals, and they don't like his policies that are hurting the working class and his inflation, but Rubio, I do think, is attractive in terms of maybe getting some of those people who are on the fence.
So, what do you think? Which way should should Trump go on this? What's Mark Moyer? What's your give us your Your take. Well, who would you choose?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do like Rubio and Tim Scott, both of whom I think can we help Trump get some additional voters. And again, I also like J.D. Vance and Tom Cotton and others who are closer to him. But I do think priority number one is actually winning the election, because it's going to be so close that I think some of these people who can bring you in, you know, a few hundred thousand extra votes. And it's also, especially in the case of Tim Scott, and you've also got Byron Donald in Florida. You know, Trump's already making headway with black voters in a way that Republicans haven't. And certainly selecting one of them will, I think, further that cause. And, you know, a lot of blacks may end up just sitting the race out if they're conflicted, which, you know, would also be beneficial for Trump.
I like, out of those ones you just named, I think Byron Donald's. If you're going to go to the point where you want to win the race, I think Byron is great talking. He'll crush Kamala Harris if there's a VP debate. And I think I kind of like him. Marco, I like Marco. He looks great, but he's weak on it. He's so wishy-washy at times, Marco. And I don't know if we need – Trump already had a wishy-washy VP.
Yes, and the another one who I like is Elise Stefanik. She's been very, very firm, and again, she's kind of one of those that independent voters might feel a little bit more comfortable with, although, you know, she has been, I think, wrongly vilified by the media, the mainstream media. But yeah, there's a lot of talented people out there, and said I'm just hoping that the person will help win the election first and foremost. VPs, are less important once in office, but although, again, as successors, they'll be there ultimately.
Matt just typed me. Remember, Stefanik got two university presidents canned, which is true.
Yeah, that's one of her big selling points, I think.
So I don't know if he just has good PR people, but I'm starting to see Vivek's name bubble up as a VP. What do you think about Ramaswamy as a VP candidate?
Yeah, I mean, he's another talented person. I do wonder if the VP role might be quite right for him. You know, he's very outspoken, and the VP role is usually want somebody who's a little bit lower profile, which I think maybe is one of the reasons Mike Pence was selected, and because you don't want there to be any perception that the VP is going to upstage the president, but of course it is possible that he has ability to dial things back a bit.
You know what I would do with Vivek? I'd make him your press secretary if he won.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. I think he would be very good in that role.
Imagine Vivek as the press secretary with that press corps. He would be amazing. So
yes, you do need somebody who's not going to take anything from them and is very willing to push back and can think very rapidly on its feet.
I think in relation to winning the election, it's Tim Scott. It could be Tim Scott, Marco, or Byron Donalds, and Elise Stefanik would be interesting too, I think.
Yes, I think that's right. I think any of them would be a good choice.
All right, tell me about this possibly bizarre debate coming up on Thursday. You know, the drinking game is, of course, how many times they try to silence Trump with the kill the mic switch. But what does Donald need to do Thursday to keep turning the corner here?
Yeah, well, I think it's a great opportunity for him. I think the whole world's going to be focused on this, especially because Biden seems to be showing signs of mental decline. Now, there's a lot of rumors about him doing Adderall or other things, which I think he may have done before the State of the Union to kind of pump himself up. But you know, I do think still we're probably going to see Trump really going after a fairly weak Biden. And I think what's going to be, I think the biggest hurdle he's going to face is that these CNN moderators, Jake Tapper and Dana Bash, are on their record as being virulently anti-Trump. So I think they're going to be in there trying to keep Trump from, you know, scoring the knockout. And I do think, you know, Trump will have a very good day. I mean, my guess is Biden will kind of be like the State of the Union, that he will survive and not completely collapse, although we could see that. And then his supporters will claim, and probably a lot of the media will say, oh, well, look, Biden did well because he, you know, didn't have a heart attack on stage.
In the end, I think, you know, the old Ronald Reagan, how are you doing so many years ago, to compare to now, I think he needs to go to that and just keep pushing this very senile old man to defend himself. And I think that'll show pretty quick.
Yeah, you know, Biden really doesn't have a record to run on, so he's going to, I'm sure, try to just keep attacking Trump and wheel out his usual threat to democracy and convicted felon lines. And you're right. The biggest thing Trump has, the biggest asset, aside from the fact that he's obviously in much greater physical condition, is that the last 4 years have been pretty disastrous for most Americans. And so he does need to keep hitting on those themes and remind people how much better they were during Trump's first term.
The think of his commercials right now, not the one he says, no kidding, folks, but... first of all, Joe Biden is one of us. That's the biggest bunch of horse crap we've ever seen. If there's a lie, that's a lie, right? Even Trump doesn't say he's one of us. Now, they talk about he's reducing the price of prescription drugs. That's all, and healthcare. That's all they're telling you that he's working on. Your $9 thing of bread that you bought at the store, he's admitting that's true. And your $4 gas, but he is going to reduce the price of your blood pressure medicine.
Yeah, and Trump needs to remind people that Janet Yellen, early in the Biden administration, claimed that with all this increase in spending, it wasn't going to lead to inflation. And then later, she has to admit, well, I guess I was wrong. So, oops, it's now you working class folks who have to spend a huge portion of your income on food now. And other essentials, we kind of screwed that one up. And he's got I think another issue Trump can push him on is Ukraine, because we've been sending money for years and years, and Biden's people were telling us that this would be short, and now it's just a bottomless pit that we keep sending money to. And I think Trump is the one who can put an end to this. The issues of pocketbook issues especially are areas where I think Trump's going to succeed. And then, of course, the other big one I think is immigration, because we're seeing, massive public backlash against this, opening of the floodgates to illegal immigrants.
Hey, Mark, we're at a front row seat. We're in Pima County. We're run by liberal Democrats. And we have our friend Dr. DeFilippo, who used to work at Pima County, has estimated they have blown $100 million of taxpayer dollars to facilitate 500,000 illegal immigrants to blow throughout the country. So we're there.
Yeah. I feel sorry for you folks. I live up in Michigan, where we don't see as much of the direct cost, but of course now too, we are getting more and more illegals coming this way, and we're being asked to bail out border states because of these exorbitant expenses.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, great discussion. We'll have to do it again, and check out the book about the bureaucracy sabotaging the Trump presidency. I think there's some really good work you did in there. So thank you, sir.
All right. Great to be with you.
Have a good day. That's Mark Moyer. And we got a poet coming up at 7:30, and Tim Sandifer from Goldwater coming up. Wake up. Second one this week of Midnight Train in to Georgia. Beautiful. Yeah, we did this Monday, 6:56 in the morning. A couple things I want to get to before we get to the top of the hour. If you want more of me, I'll be hanging out with Clint and Dave at Live the Dream Media live on Facebook. We're doing like an hour of podcasting. They're there at 10 o'clock. You get to see my beautiful face. As we like say, face made for radio. Now it's heading towards video. So be scared. You'll see the alerts pop up on Facebook, but you can check us out live
Pipes
on Facebook.
Pipe's getting a workout today, sir.
Trust me. I got my throat coat. I'm ready to roll. I love this meme on Facebook. Once you break the 200-calorie mark on your coffee order, you have to have an understanding. You don't really like coffee. You like milkshakes.
It's dessert now.
I mean, it's a lot sexier for Starbucks to say Starbucks coffee, but in the end, the empire's built on Starbucks milkshakes. Let's get real. The amount of profit they're making on $9 Frappuccinos, that's where the action is. Now, of all the things you put on Facebook and you say, like, what's the response to things, right? Like, what's the deal with the response to things, right? And what's really amazing, the one I would say the of this year, of any piece of crap I have thrown on Facebook, the one that has gotten the most off the charts sharing response, you name it, is the Skeletor character beam from Master of He-Man. And it says, it would seem that the only secure document in DC is the Epstein client list, right?
Oh,
right. And then it says, until we meet again, right? When you look at the, I look at the stats on this thing, right? So 1600 likes, right? And then when you look at the off the impressions of the shared likes, it's like 50,000 people. So what have we learned? When you get to the debate on Thursday, Donald, bring up the I don't think he's on it, but I hope he's not. Anyway, that's a winner with America. Where's the Epstein client list? Let's do it. Remember, Trump was this close to releasing the JFK stuff. America wants to know the Epstein client list. Just saying. And I know the Clintons are very upset that he tripped right into that homemade noose in his jail. So, pure accident. It's a beautician's day. I like that. Mike at Metropolis spends a lot to beautify me. A lot of time. Forgiveness Day. Love that.
Always need that.
National Chocolate Pudding Day. National Coconut Day.
No Heaven's Gate or Bill Cosby jokes.
Tropical Cocktails Day. My friend Elsa really loves pina coladas. Just saw a great pina colada recipe on America's Test Kitchen. It's a winner. It's National Canoe Day, but only in Canada, not in America. Just want to let you know. And then something that's important to me in baking.
That would be a Marinu Day.
National Parchment Day. Wake up.